At first, this was just a war between the United States and Iran. And then it kind of devolved into a blockade, dueling blockades, we called it. And then that gave way to really the battle over the Strait of Hormuz. Well, now we're in a different battle right now, and this may be the most important one. And if we don't get this one right, or if we don't solve this problem here, we're going to be in a major, major world of hurt. And that is the battle of ammunition. Who can continue to fight this war the longest? And the answer is not what you may think. And in fact, we have been suffering from a lot of disinformation from a lot of our senior leaders and then intentional shrouding of other information. We're going to pull that shroud back for you today, and we're going to show you what is no kidding going on at both the strategic and operational level with ramifications down at the tactical level. You have to look and you have to understand how all three of those work together to understand why we're in such a difficult situation and why we better change course really fast. And by the way, that course change better not be going back to full-scale operations, or we will be cementing in our defeat. Let me first of all show you what Ambassador Mike Waltz said yesterday on television news, because he was asking about this question. Lots of people are worried about the ammunition, especially our long-range strike missiles and our air defense missiles.
A lot of stockpiles were depleted, not only from what we gave Ukraine over the last however many years, 4 or 5 years, and the administration inherited a depleted situation from not only Ukraine, but also the ongoing fight with the Houthis under the Biden administration and a depleted military under the Biden administration. So they have decided, one, they're going to new types of munitions, cheaper munitions, new technologies, but also with these new defense budgets, rebuilding our great military. Clear. The U.S. military, and I've verified this every which way, has everything that it needs to conduct this campaign as effectively as it needs to be. And I have to tell you, the people that are leaking this nonsense deserve to be in jail.
Yeah, whatever about that leaking information. Let's focus on the facts. Number one, he's lying. When you tell me that we've got all the ammunition we need, that is not true. Or maybe more accurately, it doesn't matter if we have billions of rounds of certain kinds of ammunition if we can't use them, and if using them doesn't accomplish anything on the battlefield. And that is really the issue that we're facing right here. Now, you know, as we were reporting over the weekend and just heading at the end of last week, we said a lot of information was going around there. We had some insider information that said that a large attack was planned over the weekend. I was planning on, Gary and I were both planning on coming back in either on Saturday or Sunday, whenever it turned out. And then all of a sudden there was no attack. Well, it turned out that we were able to get from a lot of some news information that part of the reason was because the vice president and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff finally got through enough to President Trump to say, hey, we've got a real big issue here. And I think that's what Mike Waltz is referring to, these leaks, because whoever's leaking that the vice president and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs are staying these kinds of things, we can deal with that another day. But the fact is, those guys apparently did influence the president. And so we stopped this 13-day consecutive days of strikes that we've had. Now, I mentioned oftentimes that it seemed kind of sporadic and sort of random. And so I started doing some analysis over the weekend and started really looking at all kinds of different resources. I did some research on some AI generators, lots of headlines, talking to a lot of other people who have knowledge about what's going on here. And I think I've got a pretty good idea now what we have been trying to accomplish in those 13 days and why we stopped at 13. What we did and didn't accomplish, and what that tells you about what may be coming next, and oh crap, we better figure out something next, because the one thing this 13 days revealed is what we were telling you before they ever attempted this, even without all this knowledge that I've since gained. You don't have to be a genius to figure out if you couldn't get it done in 40 days when you were using all your best stuff. And you had everything going on, to include all the help with the Israeli side together. If you couldn't budge the Iranian side then, why do you think 13 more days is going to do? And what is the hope if it doesn't? Well, we're now facing that problem. That's no longer a theoretical problem, because now we have to decide what are we going to do, since we are at critical levels on these important categories of weapons, like the JASSM long-range cruise missiles, the Tomahawk cruise missiles, the THAAD interceptor, and the PAC-3 interceptors, all of which are in critical situation right now. And let's go through what that means. What I did over the weekend, especially, is I put together this map here. I got it generated through Gemini. And I said, look, let's plot out all of the known locations we strike, not the number of strikes, because those were quite a large number itself. But many of these locations were attacked multiple times. And you see that there's a concentration down around the bend in the Strait of Hormuz, around the Bandar Abbas Naval Facility, JASC, and several other places down there. And then you see there's a few others scattered, though, some around Tehran, some all the way up in the northwest corner of Tabriz, you can see. The heavy water reactor there in Iraq. So several of them spread around. So in some of the even north of Kuwait, and of course at the Karg Island in that area right there. So I did some analysis to find out what exactly was the intent here. Based on what we can see from what was hit, and again, this is pieced together for all kinds of information. This is Western reporting, Iranian reporting, European reporting, anything that was a credible and valid description of what was hit, we took together, and that's where we were able to put together that assessment right here. And what we were able to find out, first of all, let's look at what was officially said, even by Central Command. This was on the 22nd of July. I want to say this was after the 12th consecutive day. And you see the description there. U.S. forces struck Iranian missile targets, including maritime capabilities, missiles, and drone storage facility, coastal surveillance sites, and air defense assets. The strikes further degraded Iran's ability to attack civilian mariners and commercial vessels. Now, listen, a portion of that was true. Not all of it, but a portion of it was. So they get a tiny bit of credit for telling the truth on something like what they shot. But the question is, though, aside from hitting those targets themselves, what was the intent behind them? What were they trying to accomplish by hitting that? And I think I've been able to identify three general axes of operational intent. So at the operational level, they were trying to reduce the maritime threat capability, because the idea is, of course, to get the Strait of Hormuz open. That's what we've been trying to do from March the 2nd forward, is to take control of the Strait of Hormuz back from the Iranian side. And so they were going after targets that had to do that. And we were talking about this during these 13 days, is that you're hitting all kinds of stuff on the coast. And notice again, the large number of these explosion icons down around the Strait of Hormuz. So you see all around that horseshoe bend, all up and down the coastline there from the Bandar Abbas all the way out to Chabahar on the eastern side, and then up to Karg Island on the western side of the strait. And you see a lot of that hitting a lot of stuff along the coast. Okay, well, that's useful to a degree. If that was the only thing that Iran was using to control the Strait of Hormuz, that might have made some sense. As it turns out, we hit a lot of radar sites. We did hit integrated, that was the other thing, integrated air defense system. So in addition to trying to peel away Iran's ability to control maritime traffic, the other thing was simultaneous to that was to knock out the integrated air defense system, the IEDS, as is sometimes referred to, so that that planes and other kinds of ordnance could fly in without being intercepted. So we would shoot down additional radars. So some radars were oriented toward maritime traffic. Other radars were oriented towards incoming air assets, whether that be drones, planes, or missiles from our side. And then the other part was to use all of these strikes as a coercive measure, a coercive diplomatic pressure, so that we could, at the diplomatic level, at the political level, try to put pressure on the Iranian regime to say, hey, compel to our desires, give us what we're asking for, open the Strait of Hormuz, and we give you nothing in return. That's what the intent was. But listen, we've told you over and over, let's go back to the map again. You see that they're hitting those known sites, and some of the ones deeper inside there, inside the country, like the Sirajan and Shiraz, and some of these others were more around the air defense capabilities to allow us to fly maybe further up into the country. But what you don't see on any of these target lists, or at least not many of them, is anything about the missile cities. This is the most glaring omission that it can be imagined. We have, after all the targets that we attacked in the first 40 days, and then now that in this new period here of the 13 days, and I think it was somewhere around 1,000 missiles were fired in total of this, primarily, somewhere around there, at least what we can gather public information. And what did you accomplish with this? So you succeeded at the tactical level. You succeeded at stripping away some of the radars, not all, but some of them. So that made it more difficult for Iran to navigate or even identify what's in the Strait of Hormuz at any one time. That could be useful. Then you got rid of some of the air radars that helped it identify incoming air assets. Okay, that's useful too. But if you did not touch any of their missile cities, that means that they retain all of the capabilities that they need to strike all throughout the length and depth and width of the Strait of Hormuz, or anything else for that matter in the entire region. Now, you may say, okay, but we're stripping away these radars. It makes it harder, harder, harder. You realize you can just get a dude on a camel and a cell phone or a satellite phone who can go down into the strait with a pair of binoculars and say, hey, here's at this map grid, you can take it out. That's it. That's how hard it is. And as we had earlier today, Trina Parsi was on the show, and he said some of his analysis and some other reporting is indicating that there has been an advancement in the intelligence capacity and targeting capacity of Iran in excess of whatever we hit here, implying that Russia and or China are providing real live feeds from satellites. And guess what? We didn't take any of those down. So what we did for 13 days was further deplete our ammunition of the four key categories that I just mentioned here. So that has made us even weaker. And that has put us into a real position here. And so here's the problem that we have left now is that because we have our missile depletion, we have to start doing other things like raid some of our other accounts. Now, it's not like there's like one big pool here of all the missiles that America has in all these different categories. And, you know, this is just depleting the whole batch of it. We have some that were for the Middle East. We have some that were for Europe. And we have some that were primarily for Asia/China. So those remained in their own cocoon, if you will. And meanwhile, we were doing things here, and then we were pulling stuff from the United States as we had any kind of national storage over there. Well, those are if not out, really low, which means if you're going to continue on beyond here, beyond these 13 days, if you want to restart this, if you want to listen to some of these nuts who are saying it's go back to full-scale war, you're going to have to raid what is our, no kidding, war supply, our war emergency fundamentals in the Indo-Pacific or in Europe. Do you want to do that? Do you think that's a good idea? Do you think it's a good idea, just looking at this from the top level here, that we should burn through all these ammunition, so much ammunition, that we have exhausted all of it for the Middle East, leaving us with virtually none, at least not any of any substance, so much so that we now have to raid Indo-Pacific, which we have said for decades now is, you know, the pivot to Asia under the Obama administration. And even President Trump said, yeah, this is where we're going to focus. The Bush administration, even before they left, we're really starting to highlight on China. Now, all of a sudden, you know, whatever, let's just raid those missiles. So whatever we had, which, by the way, we're never going to be enough. And I've said this many times before, it would be even more suicidal to ever fight China in a war for anything over there. Unless we're attacked, it would be suicidal for us to fight China over Taiwan or something else in the South China Seas or any of these other kinds of islands out there. It would be absolute suicide for us to do that. And we never had enough missiles to get that done. And all the stockpiles over there, as we have proven here in Iran, will get us through 40 days maybe? 50 days? 60 days? Give us, let's say, even more than that. What's going to happen after that period of time? You think China's going to run out after 60 days? They have been keenly aware of this, as have the Russians, and they understand now the criticality of strike weapons and air defense weapons. And so they have been spending overtime on their defense industrial base to make sure they have huge stockpiles of all those categories while we have been draining ours on foolish and stupid wars in the Middle East and supporting the one in Ukraine, all to our detriment, making us weaker across the board. That's what we've done so far. Okay, well, what are the options here? Because it's not like JASMs and Tomahawk cruise missiles are the only things we have. We have some others, a couple of being the JDAMs and the SDB. The SDB stands for small diameter bombs, and those are fired from things like the B-2 bombers, B-1s, F-35s, F-16s, F-18s, et cetera, all kinds of other aircraft. They can fire those too. So it's not just from the Tomahawk cruise missiles, which can be air launched, sea launched, or ground launched, et cetera. But there's a big problems there too. So I think that's what actually Ambassador Waltz was talking about in that first soundbite I showed you, where he said, "Hey, we got other ammunition we can use. We got tons of it," and they probably do. We probably do have a lot of JDAMs and a lot of SDBs, and probably a few other categories as well. However, there's a big problem with those. You can fire the Tomahawks and the JASMs. They're long-range cruise missiles. You can fire them from literally hundreds of miles away. These, the JDAMs, some variants have ranges of about 15 miles, some about 30 miles. I understand four. Some can maybe go out to 40. The SDBs have a little bit better. They can go out to about 60 miles. But every one of these has to be air-launched. They have to be used our fighter jets. So if you now stop using these kinds of Tomahawk cruise missiles, or if you're running low on the ATACMs, because we also have some ground launch missiles that you could also add in there, but those are also running low because we've given some of those to Ukraine as well. We've given some to Israel, and we've used some here already too. So I don't know the number of those. I haven't been able to ascertain the level, but I know that we've used quite a few. But those also have some limited numbers and some limited limitations on where they can be fired. And now then, if you are going, say, we can no longer use these JASM and Tomahawk cruise missiles, the long-range stuff, now then we're going to have to go in and use more of our aircraft. Let's say that we listen to Jack Keane, and then we go back to full-scale war. Okay, and let's say that we get another 40 days. And we say, well, let's just repeat the first one here with now using these other kinds of aircraft instead of all the Tomahawks and the JASMs, and let's see if that doesn't budge the Iranians for loose. Well, number one, it's not going to change anything, because the missile cities are just as impervious to JDAMs and SDBs as they are to Tomahawks and JASMs. That's the first thing you need to understand. But the second thing is even more important to understand, is that now then, and remember, in the first 40 days of this, we lost 42 aircraft, a handful of fighter jets, some air refuelers, and some helicopters, of course, and then those two C-130s that were hit on the ground trying to apparently rescue a pilot. But it was 42, and then MQ-9 Reaper drones, which are terribly important for us to fight in this war, because that's targeted acquisition and intelligence and surveillance of the battlefield. The loss of those has been a lot so far. Well, now then, if you rely on these, we didn't have to put that many pilots at risk in the past, because we could fire it from so far back, or from the ground launch locations, or even sea launch locations. Well, now you're going to have to launch nearly all these, and certainly all the JDAMs and the SDBs, from the air. So that means you have to fly further over enemy territory. You have to take more risk that they have any aircraft missiles that may come up, or any aircraft fire. So it's going to put them at risk. We have air dominance over the battle space, but that's not air supremacy. There is still a risk, and they'll continue to be a risk. But there's also the issue of wearing out the planes. You are going to be putting so many flight hours on these things that they're not designed for. They're not set up. Our Air Force is not designed to fight continuous, long-term, sustained aerial combat. We're going to be burning these platforms up. And again, just like using up the high-speed long-range missiles, the JASMs and the Tomahawks, you start using up your fourth and fifth gen fighters, and what are we going to do if suddenly we need to get into an unexpected fight against Russia or China? Too few people are thinking of that. I am. The Chinese and the Russians are too. They are tracking this. And so I think one of the reasons they have not gotten into this war is they're content to let us continue to burn through all of our missiles, especially our important long-range missiles and air defense missiles, and they're content to let us burn through our aircraft and our JDAMs and everything else, because even those can't be manufactured, 100 at a time, you can't ramp those up really quickly. We're trying to do a lot of that stuff, but it takes time, and I'm talking time measured in years. When Mike Waltz, in that soundbite I showed you at the start of the show here, he made that same comment, like, oh, and we're expanding, we're building all kinds of new factories. Yeah, that's great. Years from now, 2028, 2029, 2030, this war is going to be over long before then. We can't even get to that point, folks, if our economy is not going to survive this. And more on that in just a second. But right now, I'm talking about our national defense. Understand this. Everything I'm telling you right now continues to whittle away and diminish our national security capacity over a war that Benjamin Netanyahu wanted, and he's going to be here tomorrow. God only knows what he's going to get President Trump to do. He's certainly going to try to get him to go back to full-scale war. But we can't do that and still maintain our global requirements, because we are degenerating our military readiness across the board in every area that matters for a war that doesn't matter. That's what we need to understand here. So those are some of the biggest issues that we have here, that the burn rate would just be astronomical. If we did another 40-day bombing campaign, if we did another 13-day bombing campaign, all we would accomplish is getting rid of more of our ammunition, would not change the balance of power on the ground, because we're not even hitting the targets that matter, because Iran has foreseen this. And no matter what we take away, no matter how many people we kill, how much difficulty it is on their economy, they will endure it. They've had experience doing it before. Their culture, their religion, their mentality right now is suffering, and they are willing to do it because their anger is so great at us, and they realize they do math too. They can see all these things I'm pointing out to you, and they realize the longer this goes, the attrition warfare ain't going to be hurting them, folks. It's going to be hurting us. And understand this, in an attritional warfare, both sides are going to be hurt. That's just how it works. There's no way around that. But you've got to be able to survive one day longer than the other side can. So if they run out of ammunition, if their economy runs off the cliff, all you've got to do is survive one day longer. And that is something that is so important to understand about this war here. For the United States to succeed, we have to defeat militarily and politically Iran. We either have to get the regime change that Sid Rosenberg was begging for yesterday. I showed you that on Sunday. Or we have to get them to compel and comply with what we're doing. But how are we going to get that done if we run out of ammunition? How are we going to get that done if they're able to extend beyond what we can, because their mentality is to suffer? And even if they have to suffer great loss, even physical loss, they're willing to do it. And they demonstrated it. This is not just rhetoric. They've demonstrated this before. And what if we try to do this and all we end up doing is making ourselves weaker and proving again that we can't penetrate Granite Mountains? Folks, this is not that hard to figure out. You may not like the answer here, but the fundamentals are screaming that they will impose themselves, and it will work out this way if we continue to ignore reality. And unfortunately, there are those who want to ignore reality. So let me show you something that was on Fox News. I think this was on there today. Victoria Coates was asked a question about, should we think about doing something else, like finding a diplomatic way out of this? And as the anchor here is going to say in a minute, cut and run, which obviously is a poison pill phrase. But she answers that and says, yeah, we shouldn't do that.
If we can manage our economic situation responsibly and not have too much pain on the American people, that pressure internally on Iran is what might eventually get this thing across the finish line.
So you agree with Senator Kennedy, America should not cut and run, right?
No, I don't see the point. I mean, the president's done what no previous president has been willing to do, which is take major kinetic action against Iran and actually degrade them physically and go after their nuclear program. It would be a waste of time and effort if we were to cut and run. And especially since I think we've set in motion a kind of an inevitable disintegration of the Iranian regime.
Oh, my God. Are you serious? Can you say that with a straight face? And why didn't the anchor say anything? Inevitable disintegration of the Iranian regime? Did you not hear? Obviously, you didn't hear this. Are you not aware that they suffered 8 years of a war that we supported by Iraq against Iran? 8 years. Hundreds of thousands, not 3,000 or 4,000, not 10,000 or 20,000, hundreds of thousands of dead Iran. The virtual destruction of their economy, and yet they endured and they survived. That's recent history. And somehow you think that now, after a few weeks of economic difficulty, that they're going to somehow do what they haven't do differently than they did previously just a handful of years ago? I mean, that's insane. Because she's advising the United States to go on a course of action with the inevitable destruction of the Iranian regime when there's no evidence for it. In fact, there's screaming evidence to the opposite. Even politically, we see a hardening of their resolve and the people, tens of millions of them, for the government that never were before. Not in this level, certainly not to this degree, thanks to our war of choice. She seems to be oblivious to that. No, let's just fire some more missiles and don't cut and run because of the sunk cost fallacy. Yeah, well, we've already done this stuff. It would be a waste if we just walked away then. It was a waste the day you started, Victoria. That's the problem, President Trump. You should never have started this. And that sunk cost was paid in blood, too, but also treasure and ammunition, physical ammunition. Some things are more important than money. You can allocate $100 billion on a bunch of new missiles, but you can't make them until years from now. So you talk about what's inevitable. Let's take a look at what may be inevitable. Because of all of these, the closure of the Strait of Hormuz and the restriction now on the Bab al-Mandab in the Red Sea, that has just exacerbated the problem. There are some near-term problems that are coming up, not just the price of oil, not even just so the global supply of oil, as important as that is, but the more important things are diesel fuel, jet fuel, fertilizers, and helium, because on those things, so many other economic work depends. You cannot produce GDP if you don't have all the energy inputs, and that means all of them, not just oil, not just gas, not just energy, but the diesel fuel to move things around, the fertilizers to grow crops, jet fuel to transport things around, and people, obviously. And all of those things are in significant constraint right now. And it's not even just so much the price of oil per se as it is the derivatives that come out of it, because economic activity is made by all of those things. And you want to risk all of that by trying to coerce little Iran into doing something we want? What do we even gain from that? From all this profound cost? It's crazy. And yet, we're running down a path to where we're making ourselves militarily defenseless, if not defenseless, it's severely constrained. No matter how many planes, aircraft, carriers, tanks, you name it, that we have, if you don't have ammunition for all this stuff, folks, it's not going to mean a damn thing. So you're wearing out the military. You're running down the defense stockpiles. You're burning through our oil reserves, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. You're raising the cost of doing anything, and you're diminishing the availability of the very inputs, the petroleum inputs that we need to make our economy function. And there's no way that you're going to wrest control of it out of the Strait of Hormuz or probably the Bab al-Mandab either. And yet all of that doesn't seem to get through to these people, because as bad as it was for Victoria Coates there, it's a lot more direct for Jack Keane.
We're on a pathway, I think, to returning to major combat operations. And certainly, if we're able to get back to that, it'll be quite devastating on Iran. Not only will they lose what remaining military capability they have, but they're going to lose every economic viability that they have, to include their oil business and other businesses that provide an income for them. Our plan is quite massive. It exceeds everything that we did in Epic Fury and then some. And obviously, the Israelis will participate.
You know what? What's absurd about that comment right there? Often, now he's the chairman of the Institute for the Study of War, and I say all the time, they're really great on maps, they're terrible on analysis. Well, sometimes when no one's paying attention, I was. Sometimes they actually tell the truth at the granular level on some of these reports that they put out. They put out reports every day of the 13-day. I don't even know what you call it, mini offensive that we just did. The ISW did an analysis of that, because it's been, what, 2 or 3 days that we haven't done any. So they did an analysis of what was done. Jack Keane, the chairman of the Institute for the Study of War, just said, hey, man, let's go back and do another one that's even bigger than the 40-day war here. But then you look and see what his organization said about the 13-day war, and it's a little different than he's talking about here. This is published yesterday. The current level and type of U.S. strikes have likely failed to meaningfully affect the Iranian regime's willingness to pursue and secure its strategic objectives with force, including long-term control over the Strait of Hormuz. The United States struck roughly 1,000 targets between July 12th and July 24th, compared to 13,000 in 38 days of the war's first phase in April and March. The United States has not conducted strikes in Iran since July 24th. So you failed with 13,000 targets that you struck in 40 days or 38, as they said. Another 1,000 here. You failed here. You failed here. And now, Mr. Chairman, you want to go back and do even more? Why did these two fail? Was it because you didn't use enough bombs? Or was it because all the bombs you used could not penetrate the Granite Mountains? Folks, it ain't that hard to figure out. There is some kind of mist, some kind of cloudy blindness over the elite of our country. Either that, or they actually want to go back into war because they want this thing to get plunged into a big fight. I don't know. There's a lot of theories about that floating around there. I used to just dismiss them out of hand, but when you see so many ostensibly intelligent people making actions that almost can't do anything besides lead to our destruction and failure, definitely a loss. And again, remember, China and Russia are paying a great deal of attention to this, and they see in this once mighty behemoth military power of America shredding itself, making us defenseless. If they wanted to start a war, I don't think it's in any of their interest to do so right now, but you got to think that they're giving it some consideration now because they're seeing America, they know we can't do it. They know our industrial base is a pathetic minimal of what it could be, what theirs is, because we don't want to do that. We didn't want to go full-on war. We just want these companies to make a lot of money, and so we'll just keep doing things the way we have, maybe a little bit more. We'll expand that out a little bit. But it won't come in time. It's going to be multiple years into the future if it ever happens at all. And yeah, we may go up to $1.5 trillion, crazy number, trillion-dollar defense budget, but what's that going to do for us? That's years into the future. That's putting money into the pockets of people right now. All these rich people, all the elites, they're making money hand over fist. So they couldn't be happier. But our national defense itself is being shredded before your eyes based on the advice of people like Victoria Coates, Jack Keane, General Kellogg, Mike Pompeo, all these different people that we keep putting on here. And President Trump, because he's at the top of the list. He's the decision maker. He's the one that's going to make this happen. And you have guys like Mike Waltz, several of these other people that were going on the Sunday shows, Senator Kennedy was another one on this weekend, making every excuse in the world why we need to keep fighting wars. Oblivious, apparently, to all the things that I'm telling you right here. I just don't have enough knowledge to know if there's some twisted reason why they want to go down a path to where we're going to be militarily defenseless. It doesn't seem that it would make any sense, but what they're doing now definitely doesn't make any sense. This stuff I'm telling you, it's not hard to figure out. I don't have access to any classified information. I don't have access to anybody with classified information. All of this is open source stuff. Much of it provided by Central Command. Thank you very much. Other stuff from some Middle Eastern sources. It's all open source. Anyone can figure this out. Why can't they? They do have access to most of these people I put on TV here, other than maybe Victoria Coates. They do have access to classified information. They have access to people with classified information. How can they not figure this stuff out? And then you see it manifest on the ground. It's not hard to figure out. I don't know the motivations. I'll stop speculating because it doesn't do any good. But what I will continue to do for you is to be unintimidated and uncompromised, to tell you the truth and to graphically show you that what you're seeing with your own eyes is real and the potential consequences later on to you, not just to our country, but to you personally, because of all of these economic situations. I'm telling you, President Trump or whoever did a really, again, a masterful job of manipulating the oil market, and it dropped like $7-$8 over the weekend on the claim that some kind of new diplomacy was coming in. We want to give spaces the ambassador said there's space to more diplomacy and more talks, which is complete crap. There are no talks. The Iranian side says they're not talking to anybody here because they don't trust a word we say. That was for the market, and it worked for today. But what it didn't do is change the amount of oil on the market. It didn't affect how much diesel fuel exists, how much jet fuel exists, how much fertilizer exists, and all the helium, et cetera. And the lack of inputs is what's going to have an effect on your farming, on getting food to market, on transporting everything. All of this stuff is real, and it's going to build up, and you can't manipulate that away. It's reality. And all of those things are coming here. And we just have to hope and pray that, like President Trump at least did, acknowledge and accede that the 13-day thing failed and said, hey, we got to stop and do something different. So they didn't have the big over the weekend. So there is still some hope that maybe enough information can get out there and maybe some sanity can get through, at least to prevent us from further weakening ourselves and putting our country and our national security at unnecessary vulnerability. We can only hope. But you're going to keep getting the truth here. We appreciate you guys. We'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.